Thank you for having me, and yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. And it was wonderful to hear Igor as I walked into the sanctuary. I wish I knew he was teaching before me. I would have showed up earlier. I enjoy Igor's teachings. And on the in regards to the retreat that's coming up, I want to reiterate the importance of retreat time. I think it's so powerful for many of us who have really busy lives, really structured lives. It's important for us to spend time in silence. Even if you can't make it to the retreat, I encourage you. Those who are deeply connected with this group, Awakening Together, I encourage you to connect in the silence, even if you can't be there. If you're really open to it, if you connect with the group, if you connect with your Sangha, and your Sangha is practicing intensely, you will feel a similar transmission that they are feeling on retreat. Now, there's so many things we can do, even when we live in the everyday, ordinary world, to be open and to be connected. And I know that retreats can be expensive, and sometimes they require we travel. But if we're connected to a Sangha, one of the things that happens energetically is together we grow as a group. Together we begin to build this sense of lineage. And if we really look at what is a lineage, what is that? What is a Sangha? What is it that we are all doing together? If we really feel into the direct experience of it, not the philosophy of it or the dogma of it, but what is it that we're doing together? So we're doing God's work here in this world. We're building something new. We're stabilizing peace. We're building foundations of peace and love and compassion within our very nature. And so I encourage you to take this work deeply seriously and to really acknowledge the power of what it is that you are doing, what it is that we are doing together. Many times along the path, because I was with a teacher who wasn't public, who didn't have a website, who wasn't, out there in the world, he wasn't, a part of the Tibetan Buddhist lineage or the Zen Buddhist lineage. I'm speaking about my teacher, David. But people would always ask me, what group are you a part of, Craig? What lineage is it? And I'd always think to myself, what lineage? Well, in the deepest sense, it was a lineage in alignment with the teachings of Sri Aurobindo, Hilda Charlton, and many Hindu masters, but mostly Aurobindo. But as I sat with my teacher, our group, we had a power together. There was a lineage that occurred. There was a direct path, a direct transmission. It was very unique, and each group has their own unique lineage. And if people within the group, people within the Sangha practice clearly, well, that lineage, it deepens. It solidifies. It has a power in your life and a power here on earth. For those of you who are listening, as Igor spoke before me, you felt that his transmission was quite different than what you experience now in this moment. Because I believe his transmission comes from the Kashmir Shaivism movement. It's thousands of years old. It's an old yogic tradition. And when you speak with him, as I saw him speak a number of years ago, and I felt the transmission of Shiva move through him. And so with each teacher, they bring a different transmission, a different ray of divinity. And as a group meets together each week, as a group deepens together, that unique transmission deepens. It becomes more integrated and more solidified in your everyday life. Of course, that's dependent upon how seriously you take the teachings and how much you open to the teachings in the path energetically. Energetically. And with my teacher David, I always felt flooded with grace, even when I wasn't in his presence. I stayed with that transmission until that transmission became my own direct experience. It was a path of opening to the direct transmission of the very force of evolution within you. When Tamil, the mantra we used to chant together was Arum Perum Jyoti. It was opening to the supreme grace light, which Sri Aurobindo opened to and Ramalinga Swamigal opened to. It was this transmission, a very pure form of light, a very high form of divinity. And as we opened to this grace together, this grace became solid within us. It became our very nature. It became our doorway inward. It became something we could always count upon. This absolute divinity. And so I encourage you all to look at what is your doorway in? What is the movement for you? What transmission are you experiencing directly? What is it you are feeling? What is it you are experiencing? What is it that is unique about this group awakening together? And to really pay attention to that in a direct way. And again, I don't mean the dogma. I don't mean the little chant that we do. I mean, what's the experience you feel in your heart each time? Each time we come together. And then in your everyday life, if you're not feeling this grace, if you're not feeling this transmission, I encourage you to step into the space of awareness. To begin to ask, am I awake and aware to these energies, to this movement of grace? Well, earlier today, my wife was working, and she left our 3-year-old with me. And I was going about my day, with my daughter, painting little pictures and playing little games on the floor and her chasing me around. And, the energy that I felt very much felt just like a dad. And as a father, we can become very overwhelmed by the energies of the child. We can forget about our divinity. But in this moment, I said, God, please come into me. Fill this body with light. Connect me to your highest. And I began to feel this divine descent of energies into me. I felt my true nature, I felt the colors of the leaves vibrant and shimmering with light. I saw the beauty of my child. I felt spacious and expanded. All this through simply opening my heart again, reconnecting to God. Because it's easy in this world to get lost, whether we get lost in our daily activities, we get lost in the drama that's happening in the White House, we get lost in the news, or a rush to work, or a rush home from work. But the beautiful thing about God, the beautiful thing about our true nature, is it's always present, always available. It's one step away. One step away. And so if you can go on the retreat, the Awakening Together retreat, beautiful. Open to the transmission of the wonderful grace that appears when we meet together on retreat. And if you can't go to the retreat because you can't afford it, you can't miss work, it's too far to travel, whatever it is, I encourage you also to open to the energies of the group, open to the energies of the retreat. Connect with your friends and teachers on the retreat. Stay connected with them fully. And just notice what happens. What happens? You know, most of us, we do the same thing. When we show up to a spiritual group, we are deeply connected. We are deeply open. We connect with the vast space of awareness. We sit in silent reverence, listening, listening intently, looking, feeling, experiencing the truth. Yet when the teacher leaves the room, now many of us forget what we came for. We start talking or gossiping or pick up our cell phones or this and that. I was always amazed. The many retreats I went on with my teacher, when he walked in the room, everyone was dead silent and sincere. But as soon as he left the room, people would start talking. Talking about anything, food, the weather, chit-chatting. They let go of their sincerity. But if we truly want to wake up in this world, if we truly want to be a conduit, and an instrument of divinity, we must keep ourselves open. Not just the moment of class, the moment of satsang. We must keep ourselves open in every moment. Every moment of our lives. Now, I was speaking with a student earlier this week. She was asking me, you know, some question. There's some question about opening to God. When should I open to God? And I told her, this reminded me of a question I had when I was a child. I never asked the question, when should I open to God? I know the answer is all the time. All the time is when we should open to God. If you want to live a divine life, when should I open to and live from my true nature? All the time. Yes, not just at 2:15 on Saturday, so when everything is taken care of and we've had a nap and our belly is full, but we want to open to God, open to our true nature. In every moment. And I was talking to her and it reminded me when I just started the path. And I was reading a book by Swami, you know, it's probably The Life of Swami Vivekananda. I read, hundreds of books by different Hindu saints, whether it's Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, Yogananda, Nityatananda, Muktananda, whoever it was, all these great masters. And what I noticed is they dedicated their lives to God. They dedicated their lives to truth. And so early on, I had that same sincerity, that same desire to know the highest, not just in the temple, but in our everyday life, while raising a 3-year-old. Is God here now? While watching the news and seeing a tornado or a hurricane or a flood has hit or a school shooting or whatever it is, a war or something beautiful, is God here now? Is this world truly divine? Is it divine? Is it possible to be free in every moment of our lives? And what does that mean? What does it mean to be free in our everyday lives? What does it mean to be free, not just at 2:15 on Saturday afternoon, but what does it mean to be free in the midst of chaos? In the midst of your father or mother dying, in the midst of receiving news that you have cancer. In the midst of heartache or sadness, is it possible? This was my ongoing question, is it possible to be free? And what does freedom actually mean? Now, for most of us, when we start the path, freedom means we get to do whatever we want, when we want to do it. And we feel good and blissful in every moment. Well, that's in a sense is a definition of egoic freedom. I get to do whatever I want when I want to. But a true freedom is we listen to our heart. We stay in that clarity. We acknowledge the spacious emptiness. Which is here right now, in every moment of our lives, whether we feel good or feel bad, whether things are wonderful or terrible. Freedom is not a feeling. Freedom is the direct experience of your true nature. And what is your true nature? Your true nature is not a feeling. Now, our true nature tends to feel a certain way. I know that's confusing. If you feel into true nature, it's spacious, it's vast, it's timeless, it's luminous, it's compassionate. It's empty and yet full. It's intelligent and radiant. And if you feel into the radiance, it's subtly blissful. But this doesn't mean that our ego has to feel this way all the time. If our ego has gotten terrible news, if it's received terrible news, from a doctor or a lawyer or a family member, the newscaster or whoever it is, there's plenty of sources for terrible news in this world. Your ego will probably feel bad. It'll probably be shocked. Now, last week at this time, something horrible was happening in Las Vegas. I woke up, I had no idea. I woke up the next morning and my phone was lighting up with messages about this horrible massacre which had happened. And so when I woke up in the morning, the direct experience of TrueNet was spacious and vast, subtly blissful. And yet when I saw this message on my screen from whatever news app it was, it told me about this terrible shooting, my heart was crying. And so often people get the idea that to be awake means we don't feel emotions. It's absolutely not the case. The more free you are, the more you feel, the more you experience. But when we are rooted in our true nature, when we are rooted in the depth of our being, when we are rooted in silence, our direct experience is that of silence. And yet, the direct experience of our heart may be of tears, may be of sadness. So, this wonderful question of what does it mean to be free in the world? A beautiful question to sit with is what am I experiencing now? What is it that I'm experiencing now? This is a question that Hamid Ali from the Diamond Approach often asks. I deeply respect Hamid's teachings. And oftentimes he will ask his students this question, what am I experiencing now? And so within this path of inquiry, we can look at this question. We can look at this question, what am I experiencing now? On many levels. So, in a human way, you may notice different thoughts. You can experience yourself in the mental arena. And this is where most people live, is they just notice all the thoughts going through their head. And that's great. And if that's just how we ask the question, if that's as deep as we go, well, then our experience won't be very deep. Now, many people, when they're walking the path of inquiry, when they're asking a question, when they're sitting deeply with something, they just look to their mind. They see if they can figure out the right philosophical argument. They look for the right answer. It's a funny thing, looking for the right answer. Most people, they just say the right answer because it reminds them of when they were a child in school. If you had the right answer, you were accepted in the group. I was talking to a student the other day, and he said, "Craig, I'm always afraid that you ask me these questions, and I don't know the answer to them. I try to have the right answer just readily available." And in the path of inquiry, having the right answer readily available is not the right answer. That's called a thought in your mind. It's rehearsed, it's parroted back. It's not the truth. What is it I'm experiencing right now? And so for many of us, we feel thoughts. So that's one level of experience. If we look deeper, we may notice emotions. And so that's another level of experience. But what's here that's noticing the thoughts and noticing the emotions, noticing the sensations in your body, noticing the sound of my voice? What's that? What is the direct experience of that? You see, as we go deeper with this question of what's happening now, what's the direct experience of my nature right here, right now, you can access yourself on the level of mental thoughts, emotional feelings, sensations within the body. But then I encourage you to look deeper. What is it that's noticing all these things? And what is the direct experience of that which notices? What's the direct experience of that which notices? Is it luminous? Is it awake? Are you not aware of my voice? Are you not aware of everything which arises within you and everything which arises within this space that we call your life? How big is this presence that you are? How big are you? Do you really end at the edges of your body? Where are you located within space? An interesting question. Where are you located within space? And by that, I mean you can hear the sound of my voice. Does it not feel as if I am within you and you are within me? Is there a quality of non-locality to our experience? What does that say about who and what we are? Who and where we are? Is there truly a separation between you and I? And so these are all great questions we can sit with and experience directly. And of course, when we sit together and examine these questions, there is no wrong answer. The answer is your direct experience. What is it you are experiencing in this moment? If it's just thought, you can ask yourself, am I greater than thought? Is there something here besides thought? If there's an intensity of emotion, you can ask yourself a similar question. Is there something here besides this intensity of emotion? What is it that registers the emotion? We can ask these questions of God. What is my direct experience of God? Am I open to her grace? Is my crown chakra open? Is my third eye open? Is my throat and heart open? Are my solar plexus open? Is my hara open? Is my pelvis open? Is my whole energetic body open to the direct experience of God in me, as me? And so as we begin to investigate in this way, again, we notice that our experience, it grows. It becomes more fuller, more infused with light. Am I open to God? What is the direct experience of God in this moment? Can I feel her light pouring into me? Can I feel her love flooding my heart? Can I allow pain and suffering to empty out of me? Can I give all my suffering to God? Again, if you like, if you like. Is my heart deeply connected with the Mother, the Divine Mother? And so again, notice your direct experience. What is your direct experience of God? If there's no experience of God, you've either fully merged into her, or there's a good chance that your crown chakra is closed, your heart is closed, you're thinking in your mind that you don't understand God, or you have anger towards God, and you've unconsciously closed the door to God, which is the same thing as unconsciously closing the door to your true nature. Because when we fully open to our true nature, what we discover is the doorway to our true nature and the doorway to God is the same doorway. The same doorway. Your true nature is God, is divine. And by that I mean it's peace, it's love, it's vastness, it's compassion, it's depth, it's power. These are all the qualities of God, all the qualities of divinity. And yet, when we open to the direct transmission of God, our very nature, our very true nature, it grows, it deepens, becomes fuller. And this experience truly has no end. Truly has no end. Every great teacher that I've ever asked, does your experience have an end? The answer has always been no. It continues to deepen and reveal itself. Now, if we've ever been confused enough to think we've found the end, I think we can quickly see that that's a mistake. How could there ever be an end to the hugeness of God, the hugeness of your true nature, the hugeness of your divinity? It goes on forever in every direction. And so, of course, our experience can deepen, intensify, can grow in every direction, in absolutely every direction. And so these are beautiful questions to play with. What is my experience right now? Do I feel contracted? Or do I feel overwhelmed by grace, by love, by joy? There's that old story in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna was asking Krishna to see the face of God. And Krishna was basically saying, well, I could show it to you, but. And as he opened the door, as Krishna opened the door to Arjuna, a blinding light came. It was intense. It was wild. It was huge. It was vast. It was terrifying. It was brilliant. It was luminous. It was expansive. If any of you ever had an old Bhagavad Gita that you got maybe from the Hare Krishnas, they show a picture of this. And it's funny to see the images of absolute beauty and absolute terror, absolute brilliance that the artist was trying to convey. The hugeness, the vastness, and the brilliance of God, so brilliant that Arjuna couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the intensity of it. And so the same is true with us, is that God reveals herself to us slowly. Now sometimes when we have the experience of Satori or a sudden awakening, it seems like we've seen the full extent of God. It seems as if we've fully come home all at once. It seems as if we've made it to the end of the path. And that's one of the hallmarks of opening into a new world of divinity, of waking up. It seems like this is the totality. For when God reveals herself, when we truly awaken, it always comes with the feeling of totality. This is very confusing for many, many seekers, many students. It was very confusing for me when I first awoke to the transcendent nature. It seemed like this was the totality of existence. But give it a couple of years and you realize there's much more to be discovered. And the further we walk on the path, we let go of the idea of any endpoint. We see our experience deepen. We can even follow this in the life of a teacher. And see some very young lamas wake up when they're 13 or 14 or 18 or 20 years old. And you notice that their transmission, if you follow them, their transmission, it deepens and intensifies. It's different when they're 20 and when they're 86. So this ongoing question, what is my direct experience right now? What is it? And we know it can always be deeper. So if we are not experiencing a depth, a beauty, a hugeness, and I encourage you to look, I encourage us to see what is it that's going on within me? What am I believing that's not true? What am I believing that's not true? What am I fighting with? What am I struggling with? A number of weeks ago, I spoke about this teaching Jikusho Kwong gave. Jikusho, who was my teacher, Ajahn's teacher, one of his Zen teachers. His question is, or his question was, can we be free during times of loss? During times of loss. If we're feeling heartache or rage, do we let the heartache or rage consume us? Or can we simultaneously ask, what is my direct experience now? Yes, there's heartache here. Yes, there's sadness here. But what is it that's noticing the heartache and sadness? Who is it that's here that's having this experience of heartache? And what's the direct experience of him or her? And so if we are having a very human experience, can we be awake during a human experience? It's easy to be awake on retreat when all the causes and conditions are perfect. It's easy to be awake at 2:15 on the Saturday, as Jay brought forward. Yes. And how about during traffic? How about when we are watching a 3-year-old? How about when our partner gives us a hard time? I can remember many years ago when I first stepped into the transcendent experience, people would ask me, how are you doing, Craig? My direct experience was huge. I felt as if I was the sky. My consciousness felt as big as the sky. And yet, because it came with such a shock, I wasn't working, I was having all kinds of health problems. And I always wondered, from what place am I supposed to answer this question? Am I supposed to tell the individual when they ask me, how are you doing, Craig? Am I supposed to tell them I'm in this heaven world of bliss? Or am I supposed to tell them, oh, I'm greatly struggling because I can't work and my memory has been removed from my consciousness and I can't think and I don't know how to drive a car and I'm not working. From what place within me am I supposed to respond? So there's many places within us. The further we walk on the path, the more rich, the more full, the more multifaceted our experience becomes. You can simultaneously have the experience of great sadness and hearing terrible news. You see many people suffering, and yet simultaneously be experiencing spaciousness, bliss, freedom. It's very paradoxical. You can feel old wounds and old pains from the past coming forward and releasing from your cellular memory. And simultaneously be experiencing great peace, great love. I can't tell you how many times people have come up to me because they've seen tears rolling down my cheeks. They say, "I'm so sorry. You're feeling so terrible." I'm thinking, "Gosh, I'm feeling wonderful." I'm so open that I have full permission to cry, full permission to grieve for the suffering of others, grieve for something that's happening within my life. So this question of who am I? Who am I? Am I simply this little ego? Am I simply these random thoughts in my head? Do they define me? Or is there something greater here? And what is this greater? How big is it? How beautiful is it? How spacious are we? How vast is our consciousness? How silent is this space of I am? So many of us identify with the thoughts in our head. We call our mind the thoughts in our head. In Buddhism, the word mind is often translated as vast, spacious awareness. Thoughts are just thoughts, they arise within vast, spacious awareness. And so if we forget about the translation, we're directly experiencing the nature of our mind. What is the direct experience of the nature of your mind? You can experience your thoughts and say, "That's what I am." Or you can notice the space in which the thoughts arise. What's the direct experience of that space? How big is it? How big are you? How big am I? How big am I? And so in these last few minutes, I know I always do a good job of talking a lot. In these last few minutes, if you have a question, and of course, that's true any time in the future. If there's ever a question, please ask. Please email me. Please bring it forward. It's always welcome here, even if it seems I've been going on and on. The questions are always welcome. And in the meantime, I ask you this question. What is the direct experience of your aliveness? What does your aliveness feel like? With your eyes closed, you feel the subtle shimmering luminosity. What does it feel like? Is it peaceful? Is it spacious? Is it empty? Is it full? Are you warm and bright? This aliveness that you are, this radiance that you are. What's the direct experience of it? What's the direct experience of you beyond thought, beyond emotion, beyond agitation? What is the direct experience of awareness? What is awareness? What am I? Does the awareness that you are have a beginning or an end? Does it have an age? Does it have a gender? Does it have a past? Right now, in this moment, do you have a past? Do you need a past? Who are you if you don't define yourself by a past? What is it that we truly are, that we eternally are, if we allow our past to die fully? Does it mean we die fully? Or is there not something beautiful here which remains? Something luminous, something awake. Perhaps something carefree, something lighthearted. Something really beautiful. And so I want to thank you all again for joining me this week. For joining me in this depth of inquiry, this depth of examining our true nature. Thank you for meeting me heart to heart, true mind to true mind. I encourage you to sit with these questions deeply. What is the direct experience of I? What is the direct experience? Not a philosophical answer. Not something we read out of the book. But what is the direct experience? Of this one right here. So thank you all again for blessing me with your presence. So I believe I'll be here next week, and I think there's the week after that is the retreat. I'll be at the if any of you are in California, I'll be at the Science at Non-Duality Conference coming up here in a couple weeks in October. And if any of you are there, please come up and say hi. And in the meantime, have a good retreat, and may peace be with all of you.